Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Lolo, only on LA Talk Radio.
Amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to All About Guitar. We have a great show for you tonight. My guests are Gary Myrick and Prescott Niles. You've probably seen Prescott on the show several times. It's good to have you back, Prescott.
Thank you.
And I want to welcome Gary, amazing guitar player, songwriter, singer-songwriter. It's great to have you on the show.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
So what I want to do real quick before we get into the show is mention that I finally set up the YouTube channel for Jeff Floro All About Guitar. Just look up Jeff Floro All About Guitar and you'll find it. There's more stuff coming up. I have about four things posted already. This show will be eventually posted up there too. And you'll be able to see all of them in one place. All the it's basically going to be an archive of all the shows that we've done here. It's a little easier to search on there than to just to go through the Facebook page, because it just goes by. There's a lot of stuff that LA Talk Radio has on Facebook Live, so it's a little hard to find stuff. So anyway, if you can, please subscribe to it. And I hope you will enjoy it. It's really exciting for me. So anyway, I want to welcome these guys on. They want to talk a little bit about two artists that have been in other bands and have been very successful. In the case of Gary, he had his own band besides playing with other people, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But it's an amazing collaboration where you have these two guys that are major players and been playing around the music scene for years and are in-demand session players and touring players to come together and do their own thing together. And I think this is an interesting story in itself. So what I want to start out with first is I'm going to play a clip from Gary's album, Blues Trash. And I love the title. But it's I want to play this clip. Kind of gives you an idea of where he's coming from. Great sound in his guitar, and we're going to talk about his equipment. I'm going to play a clip. It's actually a cover that he's doing, because I want to talk a little bit how you did this arrangement. It's a very interesting arrangement of Satisfaction. So I'm going to play this song for you, and then we're going to talk a little bit about Gary. So here is Satisfaction from his album Blues Trash. Thank you. Now, that's a really interesting arrangement. I love the what you did with it. But I want you to break it down, because that riff that you play. Now, again, the song is fairly long. There's a lot of verses and stuff, so I just cut it where he did the lead and then went into the verse. But when you do the verse, I can't get no, you're doing a riff. So I wanted you to talk a little bit about that.
That riff is from a Howlin' Wolf song, this riff. That riff is basically Smokestack Lightning by Howlin' Wolf. That's Smokestack Lightning.
But it gives a whole different feel to the song.
It does. Well, you know, I love the song Satisfaction. It's a great song. Of course, the original is incredible, and I love it just as is. But I figure if you're going to do any covers at all,
right,
then you got to put your stamp on it, or why even do it? We don't need copies of stuff that the original is great. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
We just need to hear the original. And so if you're going to hear, you know, if it's a great song is a great song, and Satisfaction is just a great song, so I put my own stamp on it.
That's great. I just think the feel, the kind of the shuffle to it is.
I think it's more bluesy.
Yeah.
Than
yeah.
the original. I mean, you know, God bless the Rolling Stones.
I'm curious if Mick or any of those guys had heard this.
I bet they haven't.
And I think
it's pretty underground.
I don't know. I think that Keith would like
they
that.
They take the subways every now and
then. Yeah.
But anyway, well, let's talk a little bit about your background. Now, I know that you were in a band early on called Cracker Jack. Tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was in the 70s, actually, in the early 70s. I was playing at a place called The Cellar in Dallas, Texas, and I was doing all my own material back then, which was kind of unheard of. You know, you couldn't really make a living going out and playing original stuff. But that wasn't always the case. You know, there was lots of cover bands. So I was doing my own stuff in a band called Gary Myrick and Slip of the Wrist. And that was at the Cellar. And the Cellar was notorious. I mean, all the bouncers in there had a gun on. And one night I was in there. I played till like 4 in the morning, like 5 nights a week. But I got paid, and I was doing my own thing, and we were like top billing, and it was great. We were having a great time, you know. And the manager there was a guy named Johnny Carroll. And Johnny Carroll was a big rockabilly guy, you know, an artist, a musician in the 50s, and he'd done pretty well. And I guess, you know, when the 60s came, everything changed, and a lot of rockabilly guys kind of went, oh, man, and they couldn't do their thing. And so he was managing the Cellar, and he was real cool, and we got along great. But one night, you know, and he had a gun on like everybody else, and one night he just slammed it down on a table, and it went like from there right over my head. So bullets were actually flying in my career.
Oh,
there
wow.
were bullets, you know, and it was kind of horrifying. But at the same time, since I didn't get hit by a bullet, it was kind of a good story later on.
Now, none of these clubs had the chicken wire.
No chicken wire, no. I'm sure they exist, but I don't know. I never saw one of those.
No, that's interesting, though. So what happened? How did you get into Cracker Jack?
Well, Uncle John Turner was the drummer for Cracker Jack, and he was also the band leader. And Cracker Jack was an Austin band. And Tommy Shannon, who was later in Double Trouble with Stevie, was in that band too. So it was Tommy Shannon, Uncle John Turner, who was the original drummer for the Johnny Winter trio.
Oh, wow.
And so was Tommy. They were the trio. They were part of the trio. And they had come back to Austin and had started this band that was all original material, kind of blues rock, really. And he saw me play in Dallas at the Cellar, Uncle John did, and came up and said, I'm firing my guitar player, and I wonder if you'd come down and play with. And, you know, I knew about them, and they were like the biggest band in Austin in 1972. And we were, you know, they were making really great money. And so, you know, I thought, this will be fun. This will be great. I need to go down to Austin and hang. And And then later I found out they had fired Stevie Ray Vaughan. He was the guitar player. And I don't know why they fired him. I don't know what it meant. But I didn't know anything. And, you know, of course, Stevie hadn't done anything then. And I, so I went down there and just joined up and started playing with them. And we had a great time for about 2 years. And then I came out to California.
That's cool. Now, what? Tell us a little bit about your influences and what you your early days, even before playing professionally. What did you listen to? And
well, I think the very first thing that I did was, or that I listened to was like, let me see if I can get this right. Some Duane Eddy stuff.
Duane Eddy.
So Duane Eddy was the first thing I ever listened to, and I thought it was the greatest. I thought it was the coolest stuff. And, you know, I still love that to this day and try to incorporate it in different, you know, musical projects.
Now, when you were playing back then in 72, what were you using music guitar-wise?
Oh, in 72, I had a 1958 Stratocaster that I bought for $400 in downtown Dallas at a store called McCord's Music. It was the coolest place down. That's where I'd taken lessons when I was 10 years old. And that was the it was everything you know your mind would fantasize about an old guitar store. And so I bought that there. I bought I'd had three Strats, 358s in my life, and they were all stolen from me through time, but I bought them all separately for around $400.
And then what amp did you use?
I was using a Marshall.
Wow.
Yeah, so Strat, Marshall, you know, not a whole lot of pedals. And you know,
was your sound similar to what you're doing now where it wasn't super blown out, or did you fully blow it out?
Well, it wasn't super blown out, but it was, you know, a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, it was definitely, you know, loud and rock and roll.
Yeah, yeah. No, but I mean,
and distorted to a certain extent.
Your sound is distorted, but it's not like that fully blowout, like
right.
Well, out the,
which is, you know, in Texas we kind of love that. That's something so you can have a little clarity, you know. So you got some clarity, but there's some, you know, there's some bite to yeah. notes. So it's kind of an in-between section. So it's distorted a little, but there's still clarity, so you could play a good chord and hear every note without mm-hmm. it being distorted. So that's a combo that a lot of, you know, Texans, we kind of like that.
Now, I just want to mention in the 80s, you had two songs that were placed in Valley Girl, totally different than this sound.
Yeah. Well, that was my earliest stuff, and it was kind of, I had a little punk influence, and, you know, I had a keyboard player that I used for certain melodies and things, and it was a bit different. It was, you know, it was just early days in Los Angeles, and I was having a great time. And then we got signed and put out "She Talks in Stereo" was my kind of mm-hmm. a hit for me, my first album in 1980, and you know, just kept on going. And then I started playing guitar for also other people. While I'm doing my own thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk a little bit about that. What else? Who did you play for?
Well, I did an album where I wrote six songs and played all the guitar for John Waite. And we were actually doing that as a duo. Not a duo. We were going to call it a name, like a band name. And, of course, I had no idea that we were going to have a number one song. So we had the song "Missing You," which went number one, was on that album. And of course, you know, you never know you're going to have a number one song. You just don't, no one knows.
Right.
Record companies don't know. Nobody knows.
Yeah.
And so I had another album to do, and I told John, I said, John, look, I've got my points. I've got my songs. You know, I have this album to do, a solo album, and I really want to do it. So I think I'm just going to beat it, and you can call it a solo album. Now, that's the dumbest thing I ever did, because I could have toured off of "Missing You" for a billion years. But it's okay. It's okay. And I wasn't mad or anything. And no, there was no, you know, no
well,
anger.
Well, still made a lot of money, so I'm sure you
oh, yeah, and I get paid. So, and that's nice. But, you know, I wish I had kind of been there for the big, you know, the big splash. But that's okay.
So were you doing more session work, or were you doing more touring as a backup guitarist for people?
I would say more session work. I did some.
And what was that like? Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I did a thing for Jackson Browne that I was really happy about. That, mm-hmm. He had an album called, first of all, he's the sweetest guy ever. We had done a benefit for the homeless in Los Angeles, mm-hmm. and had done it at the Palace on Vine in Los Angeles. And we earned quite a bit of money. There were members of Fleetwood Mac there, and of course Jackson. So many different bands contributed to this thing. And so I was playing guitar for most people on that show. Jackson asked me to come play on that album, and I was, you know, real honored and happy to do that. And so I went over and we did a song called For America, mm-hmm. which is track one, side one of the album Lives in the Balance. And we cut that song, and that was, you know, that song's actually more relevant right now than it even was then, because of our politics and crazy things that are going on in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so Jackson was, you know, talking about those kind of things in his music back then. And
now with Jackson, cool. in that time, what were you using? Were you still the Strat Martin?
I was still using my Strat.
Did you play slide on any of that stuff for him?
I didn't, but he knew I played slide, and he actually gave me an old National from the 50s at the mm-hmm. end of the session. It was really, really nice. And, you know, I love to play slide. Lap steel is really what I play. Yeah. I play it on my lap, but it's just like slide guitar. It's the same thing, same tunings, G tunings with a high D is what I mainly use. So it's like a G major chord with a high D for the E.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or it wouldn't be like a G there. It would be a D.
Yeah, a D.
Which makes it, it's kind of a bluesier sound, you know, I mean, as far as tuning goes.
That's not a common tuning, though.
It's pretty common.
A pretty common?
You mean with the D?
Yeah.
It is. It's fairly common, but, you know, you don't, you know, it depends, you know, but it's a Southern thing, too.
Oh, okay.
Because it gives you some blues that you might want, just in the tuning.
We're gonna do a song with the lap steel at the end of the show. I'll make sure I have a little bit extra time so you can kind of explain the tuning and show us what
sure.
it does. But let's go ahead and have you guys play something right now with this guitar. And I think this is On the Road Again.
Yeah, you know, lately I've been doing songs I love. I would video them and just throw them up for no reason, just because a mm-hmm. song that I just love. And this is a song I've always loved, On the Road Again, that was originally by Canned Heat. So anyhow, we're going to. Prescott and I are going to jam it together. Mother left me when I was quite young, when I was quite young. Yeah, my dear mother left me when I was quite young, when I was quite young. She said, Lord, have mercy on my wicked son. So tired of crying, but I'm out on the road again. I'm on the road again. I'm so tired of crying, but I'm out
on the road again. I'm on the road again. I don't have no woman just to call my special friend. Don't have no woman to call my special, special friend. Time I traveled out and in the rain and snow, in the rain and snow. First time I traveled out in the rain and snow, in the rain and snow. I didn't have no payroll, not no place to go. Didn't have no payroll, not no place to go.
We don't talk much. We just play. You
know? Yeah. Now, before we get on to Prescott, real quick, tell me about this guitar. I love this thing. I love that pickguard.
Well, it's a 52 reissue Fender, and it's a Telecaster. It's basically the first design by Leo Fender. He didn't really change it, and it never needed changing. It's, you know, kind of the simplest design of Leo Fender, and mm-hmm. I switched to Telecasters about 15 years ago. And, you know, I still love Strats, and I love a lot of different guitars, but Telecaster really speaks to me.
Now, the pickups are the stock pickups?
They're stock pickups.
Because you put that's the real Bigsby on there, not the Fender Bigsby.
Yeah, that's a real Bigsby that I had put on
after the fact. And you chopped the back of the bridge plate, or the tail piece.
Here?
Yeah, there's nothing.
No, that was there. That was the. I think that's the way it was in 1952.
There wasn't anything on the bottom part. I thought it was sealed on the bottom.
Nothing's sealed right here. No, there was a thing for the strings, but not the.
The non Bigsby one. There's holes in the back, right?
Yeah,
it goes through the body if you're not using the.
Oh
Bigsby.
Yeah, that's a certain type that goes through the body, right? Which this didn't.
Yeah, so you're using that, and then you're using the hold the guitar up for a second. On the Bigsby, he's got that Vibramate, the easy loader. So the way he loads the strings, you don't have to wrap them around them.
See
on the bottom of the Bigsby, he's got the. That's a cool little device. It works.
It
really
is.
Well.
It's a very interesting device.
But it makes it a lot easier to restring.
It works great. You know,
and where'd you get that pick guard?
This was made by a lady in Dallas. She had done something for me before, and so I when I bought the Telecaster, I said, you know, I want to put a leather pick guard on it. Can you do, you know, she had been doing a million of those, so it was handmade in Dallas, Texas, my hometown.
It's beautiful tooling. It's really
I love
really
it.
Nice.
And it was very reasonable, and so I put it on. Added the Bixby, and I was ready to go.
Very cool. All right, well, let's talk a little bit about Prescott. Now, Prescott, again, we've covered a lot of stuff on Prescott's background with the Knack and some of the other sessions. So tonight we're going to focus on one thing that just happened on Black Friday. They're re-releasing, as I understand, the Velvet Turner Band. Now, this is his original LP case. As you can see, it's aged, it's well-worn, it's been
vintage.
Used a lot,
yeah.
And it's kind of falling apart. But this was an interesting, this was one of the first things that you did. I'm going to play a clip real quick, and then we'll talk a little bit more. But this had been out of print for a while. And I played a couple of clips before on Prescott's show. But this album, I think it's great that it's being re-released because he was he'll tell you the story about how he met Hendrix through him. But you can hear the influence of Hendrix on this. So I'm going to play a clip, and it's called...
The first song is called So Strangely New. And that's one of the first songs. And actually, I'm using this bass, which I got at a pawn shop in Brooklyn when I was 17. And I was very influenced by John Entwistle and Ron Wood at the time, Rotosound Strings. And I came up with a riff that kind of made me feel like I was them, sort of. And that was on Velvet's album. And then I'll tell you how I met Velvet and get into the Jimmy thing. But it's a strange song, but not really. It's a good riff, but strange singing. But you'll hear it. Anyway.
So I'm going to play that right now, and you can hear the John. You can hear the influence in there. Here's Strangely New. So you're using the P bass with the Rotos on there. And what amp were you using?
Probably a Marshall. I think it went direct. We recorded that record plant. It's funny you started near the ending, though. She didn't hear the iconic beginning, but it's okay.
Oh, no. Groove that you're playing right there.
Anyway, but... But that was on Velvet's. That was on Velvet's album, and I had met Velvet. He auditioned for a group I was in Brooklyn. It was a blues group. I was 17. And we were pretty hot, and Velvet came in and looked like he did on the album cover. Except he was a 6'2" kind of looking Jimmy. And I said after we played, I said, you know, I kind of like the way you sing. Can you play guitar? And picked up a guitar there and played a little bit of Foxy Lady. And I didn't know anybody in Brooklyn that could do that. So I figured, well, okay. So I said, what about your clothes? You kind of look like you got Jimmy's, like, pants on. He goes, well, yeah, I know Jimmy. I go, you do? Really? He goes, yeah. So I got his number, and I kind of, being from New York, you doubt everything is true, if anybody says it. So as fate would have it, so we kept in touch, and about a few months later, I met him once, and called me and said, you want to go to Philharmonic Hall. Now, this is interesting enough. On November 28th, 1968, Jimmy played Philharmonic Hall, which is rare to have Carnegie Hall, of course, a lot of people were playing. But Philharmonic Hall was a classical place. And the opening act was actually a horn octet playing before Jimmy played. So I met Velvet, and he said he was going to take me to Jimmy's 25th birthday party. After the show, we ended up at the Cheetah Club in Manhattan, 15 feet away of Jimmy, you know, away from Jimmy, couldn't speak. That's the first time I kind of met Jimmy. But I knew Velvet actually knew Jimmy, and Jimmy gave him a guitar and met Jimmy a couple of times through it. But I had seen Jimmy play at Fillmore a couple of times and Salvation Club in New York. Saw him at Madison Square Garden the night he disappeared halfway through it when somebody dosed him. And at Woodstock, I saw him as well. But Velvet did know Jimmy, and I met interesting people through him. I won't go into that. But, you know, we were 18-year-old kids hanging out and, you know, putting our own band together. I came to California for a little while, and while I was in L.A. in 1970, Jimmy had passed away. And Velvet was, needless to say, devastated, but he got a call from somebody who was interested in him, you know, put us in the studio. So I went back to New York. We cut a demo at Record Plant in New York. Tim McGovern was our drummer, ended up becoming a guitar player and married Martha from Motels. But he was a brilliant drummer. And we got a record deal. And interestingly enough, we signed with Michael Lang. We went up to Woodstock. Now, a year earlier, I was some kid in the audience, you know, thinking I was cool. And now I'm at Woodstock actually signing a record deal with Velvet. So we came to California with Tom Wilson, who was a great producer. I didn't know how prolific he was at the time. He did Dylan and Simon and Garfunkel, did some jazz, and we went into Record Plant to start recording with Gary Kellgren, who actually started Record Plant. And I think at that point, because people thought Velvet was going to be the kind of new Jimmy, well, that didn't work out that way. And we started recording, and even though the stuff was pretty good, you know, there was too much pressure on Velvet. We kind of ended that phase, and then somebody else got involved, this name Artie Ripp, who has Family Productions, who actually was the groomer of Billy Joel back in the day. And Artie decided we recut some songs. We did the album, released it on Family Productions, which is that.
Yeah, it's this label.
It's kind of weird. Also, if you were around in L.A., there was a giant poster of a group called Mama Lion, I think it was called. Giant poster of this girl with a cub lion on her bosom. Anyway, it was quite controversial at the time. But anyway, long story short, so all these years later, the album kind of fell out. You know, it was good, but it was dropped and then started coming out in Europe on various weird labels. So I already decided to re-release it on Record Day and release 1,000 vinyls. So I'm in awe seeing it. And the interesting thing, what came out on November 29th, and I had met Velvet and went to the concert where I met Jimmy pretty much in 1968. So how's that for a...
Yeah. Well, this, so it's just coming out as, it's just coming out as an LP, or is it also?
It's an LP, but if there's, I think it was the top 10 pick on Billboard as a reissue of an old stuff. So it might come out on, it'll certainly come out streaming, but it might be a CD reissue as well.
Because it actually was released. When was this CD?
This came out a few years ago. It came out in England on an obscure record label. They actually released two versions
of it. Flashback is the name of their label.
Yeah, there was two versions of it. There was a mono mix and there was a stereo mix. Long story. But listening in retrospect, I mean, I was pretty good at playing at 18, but, you know, back then, you know, you just freaked out. You just didn't know what it was going to be. But Jimmy really set the bar high. And the song we got the record deal was on a song called Freedom. And at that time, we called it Freedom, but nobody knew that, well, Velvet said Jimmy had given him a riff to record, I mean, so we can record a song with. Velvet rewrote some of it. We recorded it. 2 years later, we found out when Cry of Love came out that Jimmy actually wrote a song called Freedom. So we had to change it to a tribute to Jimi Hendrix. So we got a $100,000 record deal from Gulf and Western on a song that Velvet didn't write.
Oh, geez.
And Velvet, I love you wherever you are, but it worked. And anyway, so that's,
well, let me play
an abbreviated thing.
I'm going to play another clip that kind of gives that.
Now, this sounds like Jimmy. That cut, I'm singing with a couple other people, but this song kind of represents the way Velvet really sounded. That was just a disconnection from what Velvet sounds like.
Yeah, well, I wanted to show your bass playing, but this is called Excuse Me, Gentlemen.
Yeah.
So let me play this clip. You can hear
it. It has to do with Atlantis, too.
Okay.
You better hear my. Got here today.
died the other day, but shit, what can we say? It was killed by space pirates and moon marauders. But what we really like to do is bring in a brand new order.
Definitely hear the Hendrix influence.
Now, it sounds just like Jimi Hendrix singing.
Yeah, he's got the phrasing down.
His rhythm playing was very much like it too, but it sounded like Jimmy. I know.
It's but too much.
Now, do you read?
Sounds just like you.
I know. That's why this thing became this thing where people go, is that another Jimmy album coming out?
Well, right. That's weird.
It's pretty
and
close.
And I played it for people through the years, but he wasn't trying.
Well, that's what the record companies wanted. They went, oh yeah, we could sell this and.
Well, originally,
nobody'll know.
Velda was a 6'4" version of Jimmy, but he used to walk like this, so people would. Jimmy actually walked slouched over too.
That's why
Velda was tall. But it's a beautiful guy, and the lyric is really about people getting. And this would be a perfect song today. It's about people getting together and, you know, uniting in a loving way, which is God knows we need that. This is another song I wrote. I can't talk about it. It's called "Look and See." It's about, you know, people not falling for government stuff, lies and. People deceiving, you know, and all that. So anyway, it was an interesting time period, and I'm glad it came out. So that's part of it.
Now, let me ask you, what did Velvet use?
Velvet. It's a funny name. Velvet used a Marshall and a Strat. Jimmy gave him a white Strat.
Okay, so he just used the straight amp, no effects?
Yeah, no. Yeah, I mean, I think this one song, he probably used a Univibe on it.
Okay.
So a Swirling Seas.
Now, how did you get that sound on this song? There's a lot of grit in that bass sound.
Well, this I mean, again, I got foam on there because sometimes when you want to get a more percussive, thuddy sound, you use that. But if you take it off, this bass, this is how I got it. Talk about artwork. There is none. But, you know, this is like fingernail wear and tear. And I got this bass, and it was stripped of paint. Whoever owned it prior to me. Took the paint off of it, so I think the transparency of the wood itself without a paint color, it's so resonant. It's got a growl to it.
Right, but I mean, it's distorted.
Yeah, well, that was. I think I was probably driving the preamp a bit too.
Okay, but you was that through the board or was that through
both.
An amp?
I think I always recorded direct in that too. But I think that song needed a little bit of edge. I mean, Ron Wood. If you listen to Jeff Beck albums from that time period, Ron had. He was a real pioneer, too. He used real twangy sound, but it was all distorted.
Right.
He used these plush amplifiers and Marshalls as well. Most English bass players use Marshalls. Yeah.
Well, even like your that. Sound, you have a – it's clean, but it gets dirty. It's got a little edge to it, so which I think is important.
Now, it's interesting. One of the reasons Gary and I connected, even though we kind of passed each other all through the years and I saw him play, was that there was a showing of Valley Girl. At Tarantino's movie theater in Beverly Hills, and somehow we got in touch with each other, and I wanted to go, and we ended up, because I played with Josie Cotton and was in the movie and played in a couple of songs, so we hooked up there and just had a good vibe, and then we jammed a couple of times together with a singer named John Hyde, who's a great soulful vocalist, has on his comeback trail, so to speak, and then we just hit it off, and we said, why don't we do something? And
so what is the this band as opposed to the other stuff you're doing? How would you describe this music?
You mean what we're getting ready to do?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're really doing we're going to do some shows doing my first three albums. I'm doing a lot of that really early stuff. So that's kind of the plan at this moment. And so it's really a Gary Mark and the Figures type tour. That we're planning.
And I'm a new figure.
Yeah, he's a fig.
Go figure.
I got a good figure. no, but it's an honor to, but I wasn't even familiar with the catalog as much as I probably should have been. But there's some great songs, and a lot of them are punk, and they're kind of knackish. They're pop-driven, and I became a fan, really. So we'll be probably writing in the future, too, but there's a lot of different directions we can go into it. But I like playing the music, and
It's going to be a lot of fun.
A lot of stuff that's really up tempo.
Good
that's
lyrics, not,
that's
too.
Something he really likes. I'm glad like
he likes
the lyrics.
I like the up tempo stuff, yeah. You know what I mean? As you get older,
he's caffeine driven. I mean, he really
No, as you get older, you need to get younger. How's that for
that's
a quote?
Right. That's right.
But I'm just amazed. My sometimes my fingers cramp when I see you.
No, I'm lucky, and your hands are pretty good, right?
I haven't
had any problem. No carpal tunnel.
I was just talking about that the other day. How grateful I am that I don't have any. You know, there's all sorts of guys that are having problems. Like
I don't think we spend a lot of time on keyboards. Computers, and I think a lot of people get carpal tunnel.
That's true. You
from
don't rest
overuse
your hands.
Of digit stuff. Yeah.
And also, you're playing correctly. When you play correctly, you don't get the injuries.
But actually,
don't play correctly.
Gary and I did play. We played Beetlefest. Chris
That's
Carter
right.
had it. We played at the wonderful day. There's like 4,000 people there. It blew my mind.
And what did you guys do?
They asked, well, we had to do some Beatles songs, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we did
Revolution.
We did Revolution, Tomorrow Never Knows. That was psychedelic.
Eleanor Rigby
and with no strings.
The best of all was Gary's version
of
Walrus.
I Am the Walrus. That was heavy.
Now, you did like similar to what you did to the Stones, Satisfaction.
We did three-piece, but it was kind of...
It was a trio. I mean, I love trios, and that's what we want to do. And so it was a trio. So it was kind of... almost like a punk version of Beatles songs, because it was real tough and raw,
and soloing and
trio
stuff. It was
soloing,
great.
Feedback, all sorts of stuff like that. But it's it's the Beatles songs.
I love what Gary trying to sing all the lyrics. He got his pages and he's going.
Oh yeah,
there's so many, so many lyrics of Walrus.
They asked us like 2 weeks earlier, so I had to learn the songs.
There's a lot of words in there.
I have some cheat sheets, but that's okay.
That's interesting how you approached it and the arrangement. Was that difficult because you have the Beatles in your head?
It was perfect. Gary started playing it. It just fell into place. And there was in the sustained sections on the fade out when the chord progression goes down. It's like an anthem thing. You just go on this vamp, right? And mm-hmm. it's great for soloing. And then
it's
true.
That's true. So it was a natural thing to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was kind of a cool thing for the audience because, there was a lot of bands that were just trying to copy Beatles songs, and which is fine, but,
It was actually inspired because I saw Gary first do Breakfast with the Beatles when they did Revolver at the Grammy Museum, and Gary did Tomorrow Never Knows, which was fantastic.
Well, I think the way you approach it in a unique way is really interesting. Now, are you using the P bass for these, or did you, on the Beatle one, did you use your Hofner?
No, I played the P. No, I brought my Vox.
Oh, your Vox.
But when we rehearsed, Gary said, I like the Vox, but the P bass sounds better. It's got more bottom, so I use this one, actually.
So this is the primary axe for this group.
Well, I got... No,
I know. You have all those other great
Gary,
bases.
Like my Federa, too.
The Federa is a nice bass.
So he likes that one a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I just thought that sounded great, and...
Well, you can't go wrong with this bass. It's an icon.
P basses sound great.
But the Federas we've used in rehearsal. I may try an 8-string with Gary too.
That'd be interesting.
Which would be cool, doubling some riffs. We'll see. The future is wide open, so to speak.
He's got all these great basses. You got to use.
They're he hasn't too, seen too them cool. yet. You know.
They're too cool.
Yeah, he brings something new to rehearsal all the time.
No, we did a show here for Axon, and he came in and brought 17, I think it was.
No, I just brought
17 bases.
No, 8 bases.
Was it 8?
Eight?
I thought it was more than that.
He wanted me to show him. I didn't do it to show off.
He said,
bring what you got. We took pictures of him.
It was on Axon video, so I said, you got to show these bases.
Yeah.
So before this was on
because
Facebook
because they all
Live.
Sound different. No two sound alike.
They're very cool. He has a great collection.
You play guitar.
You play a lot of guitars,
Yeah. I had to try a million Telecasters before I found that one.
Now, that you just even, have the Tele.
That wasn't even the most expensive.
Do you still have a Strat?
I do have a Strat, but I don't really use it much.
I'm trying to encourage him to use it because it sounds so great.
I played a Strat most of my life, so... It's not a big deal, but something.
Well, what about that guitar?
Well, this
well,
is...
no, we're going to talk about
okay,
that.
Okay,
I'm watching the clock, so I have enough time.
Okay.
Let's talk about this lap steel.
Okay. Well, this is a custom-made lap steel by a guy named Bill Asher. He has Asher Guitars, and I came to him and said, look, I want you to build me a lap steel. And can you make it, you know, red sparkle and put your pickups that you use? And I wanted a toggle switch and kind of in the middle, like some of the old Nationals. They would have, you know, a toggle switch so you could get to it real easy because it's in the middle. So you could do something over here and switch your, you know, like. So I could play with it. You know, and so I could actually use it. Which actually Hendrix did some of that stuff, you know, what he used his toggle switch. And I'm a fan, so that's just something I incorporate. And so,
now, can you tell us a little more about the body? What is that?
It's Bill Asher's body style.
No, but what is used on? Is that a mahogany body?
I think it's, if I remember right, I believe it's the illegal wood of swamp ash.
Oh, swamp ash. Okay.
That's what I've been told.
And what are those pickups?
I can't remember what these pickups. This is something he uses all the time, and I like the way they sounded. And I can't even remember what he calls them. And these are weird. These are actually Victorian door keys. Like you put the key in the
door.
Yeah,
I see that. Yeah.
So I found these and put these on for where the knobs go.
So you have the knob. That's an unusual way to place the knobs too.
Well, it's so I can really get to everything real easily. This
right.
way, you know.
And the what else you have? Like, what are those little jewelry type of?
Those are just antique jewels that I had him add to the body. I thought it was beautiful. I just wanted it to be real beautiful. And then we did the stars that are like the Everly Brothers guitars,
yeah.
mm-hmm.
which I love. And so we just combined some things that I love. And he made me a great lap steel that I love to play.
It's a great guitar. Now, what strings do you use on this?
Well, I often use just the same strings that I'll use on this. Sometimes I use a little heavier strings, but I find that it works fine with my... I use a regular set, you know, like 10, starts with a 10.
10s.
And... So I tried that on this, and that worked just as well for the slide. It wasn't too loose, and that's important. It's important on a lap steel for it to be, you know, kind of tight, you know, but it's not a problem. You know, so as long as I can hold on to them real good, then it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
So I just used the same strings on both.
Well, we're out of time.
Well,
it just went right by. Well, but I'm going to have you guys
love in vain, baby.
Yeah. I will now, say, though, I got to tell you about the special cord I'm using.
Yes.
And that Astrorobe cable made in Austin, it's the best sounding cable I've ever played out. No, seriously. I told him at the guitar app show a few weeks ago. This thing, it gets the truest signal, and it covers all the spectrum of dynamics. They make guitar and bass cable. It's called Astrorobe. And they're out of Austin.
And what are you using on your string?
Well, actually, I wanted to promote the string company. Remember you told me about? It begins with a V. I get their name wrong.
You mean Savarez?
Yeah. Sorry. It's got a V in it. Savarez. This is a set I got a long time ago, and I put it on here, and I want to continue to use their strings.
This is the Explosions, right?
Yeah, they're incredible strings.
The bright
strings.
Ones. They're really
and
good.
And when I use the mute, I just stick foam in there. It's still got the brightness, but it's not too bright, so I get the impact. So those are great strings. And I brought my Marshall, even though I just wanted to give my buddy here a heart attack to think I was going to use it.
That's a 100-watt head. That's loud.
Yeah, but I my other head was... Anyway, so...
And then he's using a Vox. That's the solid state. What is that?
Has a tube in it, so it's tube and solid state. It's both. It's called a Valvetronic.
Yeah. Valvetronic.
And... I started using these about 5 years ago, and I think they're unbelievable. I believe they're the best amp on the planet.
And that's the 100-watt version, right?
This is actually 120 watts.
120
Don't
watts.
Ask me why 20, but I'm sure Mark.
So it can go. It's, so he, you know, he can, he's playing it really low right now,
yeah.
But he's getting a good gritty sound out of it, but that thing can get really loud.
Well, you can hear it like...
Mm-hmm.
So it's still got a distortion to it. That's what we were talking about earlier.
Right, right.
So and the same for the guitar, but it's you know, you get your sound with this. You find your sound. It took me about 2 weeks to get my sound. Mm-hmm.
And this is the amp.
Every day I would tweak it.
This amp and these guitars are what he used on the Blues Trash album. That's that sound. Real quick, where are you guys playing? Are you
El Garcia, who's over at KLOS Radio?
Okay,
he's a producer at KLOS
and a new drummer.
And we got a fantastic drummer. His name's Dusty Watson. Yeah, I think he played with Dick Dale and all sorts of characters. He's fantastic. So it's a beautiful mix. We you rarely can find three guys that you really want to play with.
Right, that's true.
So we're very excited about the musical.
Well,
adventure.
Gary can be found on Facebook, Gary Myrick. And Prescott can be found on Facebook, but he also
on the post office wall too. Yeah.
That's true. But www.thenac.com. So let me take us out. Thank you guys for being on the show. I look forward to hearing your new stuff.
Thank you so much.
Followed her to the station, suitcase in my hand. Followed her to the station with a suitcase in my hand. It's hard to tell, it's hard to tell when your love's in vain. All my love's in vain. Train that left the station with two lights on behind. Train that left the station with two lights on behind. Blue light was my blues and the red light was my mind. All my love was in vain. All my love's in vain.